Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. It's a brave thing that we come here and do together, to sit, to slow down, to be still, to open ourselves up, to listen, to pay attention to however life shows up. That's brave. There are a lot easier things you could be doing right now than that. The reason I say that is because something I heard Pema Chodron talking about a few years back. She's a Tibetan Buddhist teacher, for those of you who don't know. She was being interviewed, and someone asked her, "Does your practice make you happier?" And she thought about it, and she said, "Yes. My practice does help me experience happiness much deeply, much more deeply. But," she said, "it also helps me experience the suffering more deeply as well." And that caught me off guard, because don't we all show up to not feel the pain more? We think the point is to feel the pain less. But I feel that, for those of you who have spent some time doing this, does that feel right to you? That you notice, in the smallest of ways, in the smallest of moments, that you feel happiness much more deeply, because you're paying attention and you're noticing and you're letting it in. You feel your own happiness, and you feel the happiness of others more deeply. It's warm. But you also, when you pay attention, you feel your own suffering more deeply. And you also feel the suffering of others more deeply as well. That's just part of the territory. It's how we see the truth that we are so connected, that we can't not be. We are so in tune with others that we can't, it just resonates. What I find hard is that space where you start feeling that suffering more deeply and you have the feeling that you're sliding over into feeling like you're being overwhelmed, because we want to help. I mean, we don't want to feel the pain more, and we'd like to help others as well not feel that pain. But we start considering it and we start seeing the magnitude of it, and it is so easy to get overwhelmed, to feel like we're not doing enough, or we're not showing up right, or that we should be doing something differently, or that it's just never enough. Whatever we do, it's never big enough to meet the pain that happens everywhere. How do we possibly show up in ways that are big enough to meet all of this? But it's why we show up here. It's why we're brave, and it's why we sit, because we want to find out, we want to meet these things. And the core teaching of Buddha was to alleviate suffering, and I like that we use that word, because it doesn't mean conquering it, and it doesn't mean ending it, but lessening it, alleviating it, transforming it, changing it. We change it into something different. We don't just get rid of it. So, not to let us off the hook for the vows that we make, to keep trying, to keep learning, to keep helping, but think of all of the famous people who have come before us, who have dedicated their lives to alleviating suffering, to making the world happier, to making the world better, to making this a better experience for us. Think about all of them. And then think about the fact that we're still here and there's an awful lot of suffering left. Even the people that we hold on the highest of pedestals, whether we should or not, they didn't fix it all. They didn't end it all. We all have lists of these people. You know, we start with the big ones. Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr. You know, those are some of the ones that are familiar to everyone. And then we all have our own personal lists. Jim Henson, Dr. Seuss, Mr. Rogers, Pema Chodron, Joan Chittister. She's a Benedictine nun. J.K. Rowling. And Aretha Franklin passed away this week. And you just saw the outpouring of love everywhere, admiration for this woman who showed up and didn't change the whole entire world. But I think we basically agree that she made it better for what she offered to it. all these famous people that we look up to, that's all they ever did. They didn't fix anything. They didn't end anything. They didn't solve anything. We still have war and poverty and homelessness and racism and sexism and all of the things that create suffering for ourselves. But what they did do was they devoted their life energy to helping, even if it wasn't going to end it or fix it once and for all. They just decided that it was worth doing and worth adding their energy to. And the reason we have them on these lists, even though most of the people, a lot of the people on that list, are people who are dead, we still know them. We still know all of their work. And the reason we know them is because they made ripples. The energy that they made, the things that they contributed, have kept going and going and going because other people have picked up that energy and they've passed it along and passed it along and passed it along, and so it's still around. And so even though Buddha taught 2,500 years ago, his energy is still moving, his ripples are still moving because we carry them forward. We say, yes, this is valuable. I want to pass this on. We keep moving these things forward. So this is my personal and basic understanding of how karma works, that it works in ripples. You know, we commit our energy to these things, and we don't know where they go, and the most surprising things happen. We don't always see the back and forth. It's not when you throw a ball against the wall and you get it back. It's much more complex than that. We affect each other in such small and big ways that we can never actually track how any of this happens. But people make ripples. And if I want to remember how that powerful that is and how much we don't know how we affect people, is that this ripple theory of mine I got from watching a TV show that ran for 2 seasons about 15 years ago. And a couple of sentences struck me. They were talking about how people made ripples with their lives, whether they were good ripples or bad ripples. I was like, oh, there it is. And that stuck with me. And that person has no idea that they totally affected how I see the whole entire planet, how the universe works. They'll never know. But I know. And now you know. So I want to spend some time this morning here working with this ripple theory. Usually when we come here, we all do this. We all come and sit down. And occasionally we walk very slowly and quietly. But all the way back to the beginning of the Buddha's teaching, it was very clear that whatever posture we're in is applicable for meditation and practice and awareness. All the way back to the beginning of the Satipatthana Sutra, standing, walking, sitting, and lying down. So between sitting and between walking, I'd like to ask us to do some standing meditation this morning. I have actually been testing this out, and we could stay sitting down, but it feels different standing up. And so I'd like us to move around a bit and stand up just right where you are. I get to get off the box and do this too. I'm going to move out here where I can move a little bit. Just find your balance. With your feet placed nice and strong underneath you. And I want you to ask you to close your eyes. We're all tucked in tight enough we can support each other. We won't tip over. I want you to close your eyes and let yourself settle. And I want you to imagine that the floor in this whole building, in the Zendo and the Founders Hall, is covered in about 5 inches of water. For those of you who are on building maintenance here, please don't worry. It's imaginary water. But just imagine that you're standing in 5 inches of water, all the way up to your ankles, nice and cool on a warm day like this. Wiggle your toes. Feel the water nice and still, and start moving your feet a little bit, just shifting your weight at first. And imagine how the water around your feet starts to move. Pick up your feet one at a time. Left foot, right foot. Set it down. At first, pick them up slowly and softly, but then pick them up stronger, more firmly, faster, or slower, and imagine what this is doing to the water. You're making ripples. Who's feeling your ripples? Everyone around you is feeling your ripples. All of the ripples are bouncing off of everyone and everywhere, bouncing off of someone else's ankles, and then off of someone else's ankles, and then someone else's ankles. Ripples, 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 all over the place. Open your eyes just for a bit. This is what Buddhist practice calls interbeing. It's a word that Thich Nhat Hanh uses a lot. For how we wander through this world, and we cannot actually possibly find a way to separate from each other. We are always connected. The water is all around us, always. And when we move, we are always making ripples, and they're going all over the place, and there's no way we can possibly not be connecting with everyone around us because they travel. This is just how it worked. When you were sitting there imagining things, can you imagine what the water looked like? Could you see which ripples were yours? Could you see in your mind where they went? Could you see what happened to them? They were moving in a sea of ripples. And your only role was how you picked up your feet and how you put them back down again. Your action and your intention. How you moved. The feeling with which you moved them. What did you intend to say? Were your ripples gentle? Were your ripples joyful? When you made stronger steps, were they firm and confident? Or skipping with happiness? Or stomping with grouchiness? People can tell what kind of ripples you're making. You know what kind of ripples you're making when you stop and pay attention. Think of how the same technical motion can be completely differently moved. So we're all standing in water. We've all played around with this before. If you splash someone in joy and play and happiness, those are one kind of ripples. But the same movement of splashing somebody in anger, those are totally different ripples from the same exact movement. The only difference was your intention. What you intended, how you felt, the energy that you were moving. Okay, close your eyes again. Find your balance. I want you to pick one foot up and set it back down, but I only want you to make the ripples go in front of you. We are giggling because we know that water doesn't work that way. You cannot just intend your ripples for a specific person. Ripples are 360. They go all the way around. Whether it's joy or anger, I can't set my foot down and have it only go in one direction. Try again. Everyone can feel whether I'm bouncing up or down in happiness. And happily, I can't contain those ripples either. It goes further than I even think they can. But all the time, all you're ever doing is making ripples. And your intent determines the kind of ripples they are. And you can never unmake them. You can follow them, but you can never unmake them. Granted, when you make your ripples out of the best place that you possibly can, people may misunderstand you. But we can't control that. All that we control is the intention and the kindness and the action of the ripples that we make, that we move our feet in the best way we know how. So feel the water settle again. Wiggle your toes one last time. Ripples move underwater. And open your eyes again. Now we can let the water drain away. You can sit down again. But as you sit down, I want you to find a place where you can be very, very still. Don't make any more ripples. This is more familiar to us, how we do this here. We sit very, very still. But when you sit down, don't make any ripples. As still as possible. you're still moving. You're still moving because you're breathing, and therefore you are still making ripples. Even if you are sitting as still as you possibly can, as close to death as possible, you are still making ripples. You're breathing. You have to. You're here. What kind of ripples are you making with your breath? Last fall, we did a practice period here on part of Suzuki Roshi's Not Always So, and he used a phrase in there where he said, take care of your breath. And that struck me for the first time last time. I was like, what does that even feel like? Because I'm vaguely aware that there's air going in and out of me all the time. But what is it to actually take care of the air that you're breathing? Like, what does that feel like? And I sat at home, and I stared at the wall, and I tried to pay attention to taking care of my breath. And what occurred to me finally was something that we talk about a lot here that I used to have a really hard time with, and that's how we talk about accepting things as they are. You know, that we accept whatever is. And we tend to panic a little bit about that because we think that accepting means passive helplessness. And that's not what we're talking about. And when I was sitting and trying to learn how to take care of my breath, I realized that accepting is breathing. Because when we breathe in, what are we breathing? We're breathing the air that's right here. We can't breathe the air over there. We can't hold our breath long enough to go 5 miles in that direction and find some better air. We have to breathe what's here. We accept that. And we do the same thing when we talk about accepting here, is accepting our experience. We accept the experience that is happening right here. But what happens to the air after it enters your body? It doesn't stay the same. It changes. Your body changes the air after you take it in. And so you accept and you change it. And it comes out differently than it started. This is what we do here. We accept our experience. We transform it. We turn it into something different, and we release it in a way that we hope is the most helpful for everyone around us. The trees like the carbon dioxide that we breathe out. It helps them. So we only ever accept and transform and release. This is all there ever is, breathing and dealing with our experiences. So do we choose our breath? Do we welcome the air in, or do we try and keep it away? Because we could find gas masks, and we could walk around wearing hazmat suits, but that's not what we do here. We practice accepting it. Not in a way that we can't do anything about it, but we practice accepting it. We practice being really honest and looking at what's going on and paying attention and seeing this is what is. And now I'm going to transform it into something that I feel is more helpful. The air becomes helpful to me. The air becomes helpful to something else. This is all there ever is. Our bodies know how to do this, and our minds, maybe we can pick up cues from them. We breathe, and this is what happens, but this is not limited to breathing. It turns into how we walk, and how we talk, and how we speak. It's everything that we talk about the Eightfold Path. How we breathe turns into how we interact with everything, to how we live our lives, to the energy that we make. Every time we move, every time we talk, every time we breathe, every time we act, we're making ripples. And so what we do here in meditation is we sit and we practice paying attention to the ripples that we're making. What kind are they? We take in, we transform, we release. We do this moment after moment, whether we're here, whether we're out there, whether we're 10 miles from here. This is all we ever do. But again, we notice and we feel the happiness more and we feel the suffering more. And it is so hard not to ask that question again of there is so much. What do I do with it? How do I meet it all? There's so much. Sharon Salzberg is a Vipassana teacher, and I like her writing very much. She writes blog posts for On Being these days, and she wrote something about people having 3 feet of influence. Maybe some of you have read this, but I want to read you something short from it. She said, "Few people are powerful enough, persuasive, persistent, consistent, and charismatic enough to change the world all at once. But everyone has the ability to affect the 3 feet around them by behaving more ethically, honestly, and compassionately toward those they meet." Just picture it. If more people acted from this space of love, there would be more and more terrain covered. 3 feet of influence. I think the Zabutons are probably 2 feet by 3 feet. So there's your space. There's your space of influence. You get to choose how you influence that space all the time, and it's portable. You take that space everywhere you go. It's not just here. It's not just there. It's everywhere. So how am I breathing in that space? How am I treating the person who comes to meet me in that space? We just decide how we make the ripples in this space. And what happens to them after we make those ripples, they're not ours anymore. They just travel. They're free to travel however they travel. And it's not about making sure that they were good or seeing what happened. Because in all of this, what is the most not important thing is ending up with your name written down somewhere as somebody that did something that somebody thought was worth writing down. It is enough just to do it and to not worry about the ripples that happen after that. Ripples are unmeasurable and uncountable. You couldn't keep track of them if you tried. There's just too many of them. Suzuki Roshi always said that this practice is about no gaining ideas. It's not about accomplishing anything. There's no goal of having visible, quantifiable results. We just do. We panic a little and we think that we need to have the power to change all of the bad things and stop all of the bad people so that no one else suffers. That somehow we can end injustice if we just try harder and be more forceful. And I want to be very clear about this. The things that cause suffering in the world are worth changing. This is a good aspiration to lessen suffering. We could all handle being in less pain. It would be beautiful. And so we keep trying, but not with the goal of conquering things out of force. All we ever do is offer. We offer ourselves, we offer our hands, we offer our feet, we offer our voices, with no idea of measuring our effectiveness or outcome. It's not necessary. We don't need to spend the energy on that. We just spend the energy on offering. However we show up, however we are. But we still get scared that our ripples aren't big enough. We want to know that we matter. We want to know that we make a difference, that we showed up in this universe and that was a good thing that we did that. I was feeling nervous about this one day, and the universe sent me a very, very good story. And it's about Desmond Tutu, who is one of the people who got written down in all sorts of places and is still doing monumentally good things. But this is a phenomenal story. And this is how I found it written, so I want to just read it to you. There were many people who were asked by the BBC about 15 years ago to name the defining moments of their life. The biggest thing that was the turning point for them, that just turned everything around. What was that moment for you? They asked a bunch of famous people that. And this is how this goes. So asked by the BBC to identify the defining moment in his life, Archbishop Desmond Tutu spoke of the day he and his mother were walking down the street, and a tall white man dressed in a black suit came toward them. Tutu was 9 years old, and apartheid was in full swing. In the days of apartheid, when a black person and a white person met while walking on a footpath, the black person was expected to step into the gutter to allow the white person to pass, and to nod their head as a gesture of respect. But this day, before a young Tutu and his mother could step off the sidewalk, the white man stepped off the sidewalk, and, as Tutu and his mother passed, he tipped his hat in a gesture of respect to her. The white man was Trevor Huddleston, an Anglican priest who was bitterly opposed to apartheid. That moment changed Tutu's life. When his mother told him that Trevor Huddleston had stepped off the sidewalk because he was a man of God, Tutu said that was when he found his calling. When she told me that he was an Anglican priest, I decided there and then that I wanted to be an Anglican priest too. And what is more, I wanted to be a man of God. There's your 3 feet of influence. Trevor Huddleston was an Anglican priest. He gave sermons. He was very opposed to apartheid and worked publicly and in political circles to work towards accomplishing that. But none of those big public things were the things that changed Desmond Tutu's life. It was because he made 2 steps off the sidewalk and moved his hand and kept going. Of course, I don't know for certain, but I would be willing to bet money that Trevor Huddleston didn't do that with any idea that this would ever be written down somewhere. He just did it because that's how he breathed. It was just who he was. It was how he chose to move his feet. It was how he chose to live. It was no motive other than basic human kindness. That's all. Just basic human kindness. There was no motive. It was uncontrived. He just showed one moment of basic respect for another human being, and it completely changed somebody's life. This is how you create a world with more love and equality and less racism. By those tiny moments of basic human kindness. This is the Dalai Lama again, isn't it? My religion is kindness. It shows up in the small, small ways that we do all of these things. And so that's a big, important story that got written down, and it's very cool. And it's very easy to say, well, that's the thing that I read in the book, and those are people who are nowhere near me, and it doesn't affect me, and it's not me. Like, somehow we work really hard to convince ourselves that those people are special, and we're just normal. It doesn't work that way. Look around. Pay attention. These things happen all the time, all over the place. So some of you know that I have another religious practice outside of Zen. It's called CrossFit. I'm serious. If they ever let me do this again, I will tell you about it. Weightlifting is very, very good Zen practice. And we were at the gym one day, and we were working on one of the more technical lifts. And so we're all, you know, paying attention and doing our own thing, and the coach is moving through the room, helping people with their form. Because it's good to pay attention to, so you don't drop these things on your head. So he's moving through the class and helping people adjust things. And I heard him on the other side of the room, male coach working with a male athlete. And he said, I heard him say, watch that woman over there. She's a really good technical lifter. Watch how she does this. And he did. She just kept working, and they watched. And it was beautiful, because the male athlete's ego did not explode, and the woman had not been asking for anything. She was just doing what she did. But there was the respect there that not only existed, but now it was named. And like Trevor Huddleston, who tipped his hat to Desmond Tutu's mother, the coach in that situation, I'm pretty sure he didn't have a big gargantuan motive for why he did this. He was like, look, there's something being done well. Here's how you can learn from this. And it just happened fluidly, beautifully. This is how you create a world with more equality and more love and less sexism. You just breathe that way in the small area of your influence, and you let people know, this is how the world works in my 3 feet. We're equal in these 3 feet. We appreciate people because of them doing things well. It doesn't matter who they are. We treat people as people. We treat people with love. We treat people with respect. We show admiration and encouragement, and we learn from each other. There's humility there. We create that in spaces all the time just because we choose to create them. We do this one moment at a time. We all, by making ripples, we create what kind of a world this is. Just in the smallest ways, they make really big ripples. These are small things. Next to our gym, there's a garden center, and it's beautiful, but I'm usually terrified of going in there because I don't do so well with plants. But I got really brave one day and I walked in there and there was this whole section of plants and the big sign said, these plants are really good at cleaning the air. I'm like, oh, I work in an office. I'd like cleaner air. And so I bought one and I took it home and I repotted it. It's very friendly and spiky. And I was sitting next to it and I realized that it was doing the same thing that we get to do all the time. It's just sitting there and breathing. It's cleaning the air. It's not even moving. I mean, we sit here and we do zazen together and we pay attention and then we get up and move around and we feel like, you know, maybe the moving around part is the more important part. This plant, that's all it's got is its pot. It sits there all the time. It depends on me if I want to move it somewhere else. But all it ever does, the essence of its life, is to just live. And clean the air around it. And it can't pick the air that's around it. It's in its pot. It just touches whatever touches it. It cleans the air that's right around it. And it just keeps trying. Sometimes I look at it and I'm jealous. Because I'm pretty sure that plant isn't sitting there and doubting its abilities. And wondering, like, if only I could clean the air in California, too. If only I could help in China. Like, it doesn't sit there and wonder if it could be doing more. And I really like that plant. Because it reminds me that all I have to do is make good ripples in the space right around me. Whatever comes in contact with me, whatever is in front of me, whether I think of it as a thing or a person, those ripples are how I treat it. All we ever need to do is make good ripples, to do our best. And we try to practice not needing to see whether they go any further or how they impact us or what they accomplish. Our only job is to be aware and to breathe and walk in the best possible way that we can that is truest for all of us, which looks like a lot of different things. So whether you sit under a Bodhi tree for 6 days in meditation, or whether you sit at the Capitol in protest for 6 days, we all have to find our way of walking and breathing and making ripples because they all look different and they're all needed. We just, each of us, clean the air around us in the best way that we possibly can. And that looks different for everything, for everyone. Once, a few months ago, when I was struggling to remember this, I was really grateful for something that I had memorized. Because our hearts remind us of these nice things sometimes when we tuck them in there. They're like, what about this? And it's the verse that I put on the front of your program, the 10-verse Canon Sutra. Canon, for those of you who aren't familiar, is the name of the being that we have as our symbol of compassion. Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit. She has many names, but always just the being of awakened compassion, what that looks like. And the phrase that we use a lot is that she hears the cries of the world, which to me in my mind means like seeing all the ripples. She hears and sees what's going on. A lot of the time she's depicted with 1,000 eyes and 1,000 hands. She sees and she acts, she breathes and she moves. Always just in the space that you can reach. And so I want to just read this for you. This is possibly the least literal translation from the Japanese that I've ever found of this verse, but it's beautiful to me. And I love it. Absorbing world sounds awakens a Buddha right here. This Buddha, the source of compassion. This Buddha receives only compassion. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, just compassion. Thus the pure heart always rejoices. In the light, recall this. In the dark, recall this. Moment after moment, the true heart arises. Time after time, there is nothing but this. There's just something in here that is so comforting to me and starts right at the very beginning. Absorbing world sounds awakens a Buddha right here. We all get to read this for us. This isn't about somebody else. You absorb world sounds. You take in what's going on. You feel the ripples. You notice things. You accept what's going on. You see what's going on. And when you see that, you are awake as Buddha. And when you see that, you get to be the source of compassion. The source. You get to decide what your ripples are. You get to make them every moment. You choose them. This Buddha receives only compassion. You choose how to handle the ripples you receive. You receive them with compassion. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, just compassion. Whatever there is, this thing we've referred to as the triple treasure of teacher and teaching and community, all of us throughout all of us, there's just compassion. We can do this together. Thus the pure heart always rejoices. Joy is deep. Joy is not the same as pleasure. Joy goes deep. And it is underneath that experience of compassion that we give and that we receive, that we welcome and that we share. When that is the only thing, then there is joy. And that is pure joy. In the light, recall this. When things feel good, when it is light outside. In the dark, recall this. When things feel painful, remember this. Moment after moment, the true heart arises. Moment after moment, you show up as yourself in the best way that you can. Your true heart is always there. You get to choose that moment over and over again. Time after time, there is nothing but this. That's all you ever have to do in every moment is just show up and just be compassion. See the ripples. See how you make them. Embrace what's happening. This is one of the main reasons for me why meditation is so important. Because when we sit and we are silent, it is where we practice seeing our own ripples. We are silent and we listen and we notice our thoughts and we see how we're breathing and we see how we're moving and how we're acting and how we offer ourselves in our 3 feet of influence on the cushion, according to our deepest and truest aspirations. We do this so that we can remember when we forget. So we choose how to breathe, moment after moment after moment. We offer that through our lungs. We offer that through our mouth, through our hands, through our footsteps. Every one of our breaths matters. Every one of our steps counts. We will never ever see how big the ripples are, how far they go, who they touch, years, months, eons down the road. But all we just do is sit and breathe and move, moment after moment. Because these are the smallest, hugest, biggest things, and they're bigger than we can even imagine. This just feels very real to me, very practical, and I'm so grateful that we get to do this together. Thank you. It matters. Now, I think I would like to listen for a while. Somebody else like to share their own ripples? Benton.
Your 3 feet of influence reminds me of an article I just read in Scientific American. What they were studying was our inner voice. And they put people in an fMRI machine, and that's the machine that lets them see what parts in your brain are lighting up or activating. Kind of gives them an inner sight of what we as Buddhists always do, but on other people. And they had people recite something they already know and see what lights up. And they would have them internally talk to themselves, and they would know when they were doing this so that they could match it up with the scan. And when they were just talking to themselves, the only thing that lit up was the part of the brain that we think of as our speech center. But when they were talking to themselves, another part of their brain lit up that is used to predict what other people are thinking. Which I think it's really neat that we have a part of our brain that predicts what other people are thinking. But it's also neat that you're using that on yourself. Your own brain is not making a distinction between yourself and others. There's no divide there. And that's how this influence happens.
That's kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear him back there? Yeah, we can't help it.
Yeah.
It just happens. That's genius. Katie, did you have something?
Yeah. When you mentioned Dr. Seuss, I was reminded that our ripples are not always positive ones, and that Dr. Seuss did draw some very racist propaganda at one point in his career. And but we don't think of that, because we think of him for the very positive ripples that he created. So we should not punish ourselves for the negative ripples. We should just make sure we create more positive ones.
You know, once you make your ripple, you're like, oh, wow. You can't unmake that ripple, and so you keep doing better. And you're right. You know, I mean, this is one of the genius things that I learned when I started practicing here, is that a lot of our practice is just learning how to be gentle to ourselves. That surprised me. But we're not good at that. And to be given permission to do that, to keep moving, to see, okay, that step, I'm not sure I wanted to go there. I'll change course. To be able to keep an eye on your ripples and see where you're going is so important. Because, yeah, nobody did it all right. In that whole list of great big famous people, they were all complicated human beings. Yeah. John?
Of course, the ripple analogy is beautiful because it's each person has responsibility and each person has an influence. But what else is cool is if you get people acting together towards something positive, a bunch of ripples can...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what Sharon Salzberg was talking about. She's like, think of if we're all, creating this, this thing with our 3 feet of influence. Think of how much terrain we can cover. You know? It makes a difference. It adds up. And the point is to not end up with a really big space so that we're bigger or that we win or something, but just to create as many good ripples as we can. We're quiet. Quiet is good.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I can really resonate with the ripples as they go out. But you mentioned self-compassion, and so I'm thinking of the ripples as they go in. And that's the heart of it.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, Have you thought about that at all? Like, I mean, making ripples is one thing.
Mm-hmm. They never just all go out. They're internal. Everybody as much as they are external. And a lot of that part has to do with what Benton was saying about the voices that we use inside our own heads. Like that voice inside our head, that makes ripples too. And if we notice that voice is cruel, we can choose to find a way to make different ripples. And what's frustrating for me is that we grow up with that being so normal that we don't even know we can change that. And so often we show up somewhere like this where we meet somebody who's like, you know what? You don't have to do it that way. That's actually not helpful. And you have a choice. And so that's where that works for me, because you feel those when you come in and you can teach yourself to make better ripples in your own direction. Because there's nothing, I mean, in that whole interconnected everything, you're feeling that inside. You're feeling your own ripples just like you're feeling everyone else's. And to learn to be kind and to learn that voice in your head, just because it's there, doesn't mean it's right. We learn to be kind. And those are sometimes the hardest ones to make. Like, it's so easy to be like, I will hand you this teddy bear. That's great. When you won't do that for yourself. So this is why we sit and we practice. And people who we trust, we're very thankful that they tell us that we can be gentle with ourselves.